Okay.
All righty. Thank you very much. We'll call the Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting to order for July 21st. We're at the Oceano Community Services District, and we'll do roll call.
Okay. And so would you like me to do it with the new rotation?
Yes.
Okay. Chairman Hangman?
Here.
Vice Chairman Ikeda?
Here.
Member Bright?
Here.
Member Barnage?
Here.
Member Gehring?
Here.
And Member Waggy?
Here.
I'm here, too.
Member Ogren? How soon we forget.
Oh, don't I know it.
Next order of business is the annual fiscal year rotation, which we have done as far as rotating the former vice chair, the CSA 12 representative, into the chair position. And then who's in the vice chair position?
And then the agriculture delegate goes into vice chair.
Okay.
Brian will be surprised.
That's what he gets for missing a meeting, huh? All righty. Next order of business is public comment. And seeing none in the public, we'll move on to the next item, which is approval of the special meeting minutes of May 19th. We have any comments or corrections on the minutes? I believe Andrea.
Yes,
does.
We have a few corrections on the minutes related to dates. So on the agenda, it says approval of special meeting minutes, but the date is May 19th. And you may recall our special meeting was actually on May 26th. So it should read May 26th. As well as the first page of the minutes, it should read May 26th. In our next regularly scheduled meeting, which is noted very lastly on page 9 of the minutes, is actually September 15th in Grover Beach, and not November 17th in Pismo Beach, as noted. So I apologize for those inconsistencies.
You said November 19th? I'm sorry.
It's September 15th in Grover Beach. That's when we'll meet next.
September 15th.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for those corrections. With that, I would entertain a motion to...
I move approval as corrected.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any public comment on the item? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I'm going to just abstain since I wasn't at the meeting.
Okay, next order of business is the operations report, and Andre's going to handle that one.
Yes, so the lake elevation is 464.28 feet. The storage is 13,256 acre feet, which is 27% capacity. The rainfall to date is 0 inches, so the rainfall to date just reset July 1st. The plant production is 1.9 million gallons per day. Downstream release is 4.1 MGDs, and state water is 3.3 MGDs.
Any committee members, questions on that? All right. Want to go straight to the drought? Is that
the
next up?
Projected reservoir levels?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah. Jill, would you like to present that?
Good evening, Jill Ogren, sole member of the Public and Utilities Division representative. In your packet, you should have received the Lopez Reservoir Storage projections. And what we're seeing is that we're basically, what we've been projecting over the last couple months is actually occurring. What you have there is the green dashed line at this was as of July 1st. We were at 13,678. We are predicted to get close to the 10,000 acre foot level still somewhere around November. And there is an orange dashed line, which is basically parallel to the green solid and green dashed. And that represents the carryover of each of the agencies. So it's actually water that has already more or less been spoken for. And so our minimum pool for the reservoir is 4,000 acre feet. So you can see that we're going to get close to that somewhere again in November. So that although the elevation of the lake will be at 10,000, the orange dashed line shows the amount of water available is the difference between that orange dashed line and the 4,000 mark at the very bottom. So, and we did alter this a little bit to reflect the governor's declaration back in May, where he proclaimed that, or he had an emergency drought measure, and we all had to show our three-year projected supplies. So we supplied that to the TAC members back in June, and basically we used that same method that was outlined in the governor's executive order to use that same method to project this going forward. So if the chart is a little bit different than the last time you saw it is because we've kind of made it all come into consistent with what the governor's executive order was. So that's, if it does look different, it's because it's actually, what it does is project the last 3 years worth of hydrology and you project it out into the future. So it's as if we had another 3 years just like the past ones. So it's a fairly conservative, hopefully, conservative model we have here. Are there any questions?
Any questions from the committee members? Just one question, Jill. Maybe you could expound a little bit more on the first point you made, the difference between the green line, the 10,773, and that orange line, which is around roughly 7,000 acre feet. That difference of that 4,500 acre feet or so is water that's carried over and I guess to say spoken for.
Yeah, it's designated. Each agency has created carryover, and the carryover comes from any unused entitlement water that they may have saved, maybe through conservation or and other methods, other water supply they used instead of their Lopez. So any unused entitlement they get to have in their like carryover account, which they can use in the next year. So that... that difference between that represents, like you said, about 4,500 acre feet of carryover that has been accumulated by all the agencies. That's the total.
I guess that's not to say that the agencies that have that water in their portfolio, so to speak, couldn't work out deals with other Zone 3 agencies. I think we talked a little bit about that at the TAC meeting, just from a practical standpoint.
Right, definitely. Yeah, there's some, it's water available to do sort of however the agencies want to use it or, you know, potentially sell it.
Okay. Climate update.
Okay, so as you can see on the map for July, San Luis Obispo County is still experiencing exceptional drought, as is most of the Central Coast. NOAA predicts above average temperatures for all of California for the month of July. And for the precipitation, we have an equal chance for California being average, above average, or below average. So... Right. So that's my weather forecast.
Next item then is the Habitat Conservation Plan update.
I got something on the climate update.
Uh-huh.
If you go onto the NOAA site, that information comes from.
Grab a mic there, Jim.
You'll see a place where they talk about ENSO, which is the Pacific seawater temperature oscillation, basically how they predict whether you're going to have an El Nino or a La Nina. Right. And so right now they're leaning towards between neutral to as much as 55% chance of a La Nina for the coming season, which means if it's La Nina, it's more to the dry side for the next rainfall year. Mm-hmm. So food for thought.
I don't like the taste of that food. Because I think when we were looking at the reservoir levels, if we don't get any appreciable inflow to the reservoirs, there's really not much water to allocate out next year. What we have is what we've already been allocated.
Yeah, that's exactly where we're at with it.
You know, one more comment, and I probably am repeating myself, but I live above the dam in the watershed, and last year I had 90% of normal rainfall at my place above the dam. In a normal, if we had had three or four normal years prior to that level of rainfall, the creeks would have been running past my house, but they didn't. Mm-hmm. The reason is the ground is very dry and all that water is going in. So the takeaway for me, at least, is that there's going to have to be a pretty good size rainfall a year to get those creeks running again because of the dry conditions in the ground. So we're not just looking for average rainfall at this point. We're looking for way above average to get back to normal. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Go ahead, Jill.
So I kind of would like to just, does anybody have any questions on what you read in the staff report regarding the habitat conservation plan? It was a little bit of what was presented back in, I think in January and some of your, in your March meeting. But I would say saying that not a lot has changed since January, the big thing recently that has happened is that based on the water contractors, they requested some additional modeling to be done by our consultant, ECOR, to potentially model some new scenarios for a water supply contract changes that have been kind of in the works, moving to something more of a storage model, which is similar to what we're sort of operating here under the LRRP, where any supply that that your particular agency doesn't use becomes your carryover in the next year, water that you can store for future use. And currently the contracts are not written that way. And so this has been something that the contractors have been interested in investigating. So we went out to the ECOR and got an estimate or a proposal from them, and that was distributed to the TAC members in July, and they are going to be meeting, I believe, at the end of the month, July 27th, and then they'll give us their feedback on whether they want us to proceed with that scope of work for the consultant. And the other piece of news that has recently happened was that in June we met with, regarding the water rights permit, is that we met with the State Water Resources Control Board to go over kind of what our idea and how we thought we needed to proceed with our the water rights permit. And it turns out, as we had mentioned before here at the advisory committee, that we were going to go forward with an extension of time, and we were going to move forward with a change petition. So after meeting with the State Water Resources Control Board, what we found out is that you actually move forward on both of those fronts at the same time. They're concurrent, and neither one can happen before the other. And part of that is because what we didn't realize is that your extension of time, the time that you think you're going to need, actually reflects the time to process this change, process any changes you want to the permit, and then to see how that change, works when you operate your reservoir with those proposed changes. So you might have to experience that for maybe 20 years, and once you go through that process, you have a certain amount of history where you've operated the reservoir under your proposed changes. That's when they look at how is it working, and if if they approve that, then you get licensed. We thought you did an extension of time. You got that. And then once you would go through the process of getting your permit changes approved, and then you were done. But it actually, there's a longer period of time. So, and because of that, they also mentioned that we would not be able to finish our permit unless we had the HCP, would also have to be factored into this because it's has to do with the releases, and that would have to be part of our permit, probably. So because we don't know what the releases are, everything is sort of tied together here. So that's kind of where we're at right now. So I imagine that we'll have more in your November meeting, correct? Do you have a November meeting? Yeah. In November, we'll probably have information on whether we're proceeding with that additional modeling or keep moving forward.
So that makes sense to me. What you're speaking to is the difference between a water rights permit and then when it perfects into a license.
Mm-hmm.
So the HCP is necessary to modify the permit, mm-hmm. but then you have to operate another permit for a period of time before you can perfect it to a license, with the point being that ultimately the license is what we want because then that provides more permanency in terms of the water rights to it. So,
correct. And we did investigate the fact that we have basically been operating, we have been doing downstream releases. And we asked, could we use the history we've already had since we've been working on this since 2000, say? And they said no. So it'll be moving forward.
That's one of their favorite words, I think.
But may I make a comment? I believe this has been an issue, has it not? I mean, for years.
Decades.
Hasn't it?
Almost 20 years now.
Where we've been going round and round with this.
Mm-hmm. And we've also been working on the HCP for a number of years, too. And they are tied together, and that is why the two... Well, I don't know if that's the only reason where we're at.
This HCP has been an issue where we've been trying to get the release portion complete.
Mm-hmm. And approved by the agency, approved by the resource agencies.
And certainly it's been complicated because of... one of the factors is that Arroyo Grande Creek is one of the most southerly creeks that supports steelhead habitat, and it's a creek that in natural conditions doesn't flow to the ocean during the summertime. So the models that had previously been evaluated or were known up in Northern California where the creeks or the rivers were running continuously to the ocean just never were applicable to Arroyo Grande Creek. So... a lot of that has been, the consternations of what is necessary for environmental releases. But it was sometime in early 2000, I think, that the interim downstream release schedule was adopted. And that became sort of the trial and error of let's start doing more downstream leases for the habitat and get into a practice and see if that will then provide some of the information or evidence to be able to get the HCP done. So during this period of time, we have been operating now for several years as if the HCP was adopted, and we've been learning a lot. So it's, it hasn't been 20 years of wasted time. The twist now is with the desire to have storage rights, then that requires some additional modeling. It's no longer modeling for species needs, but now it's modeling for the municipal desires to have storage. And it's kind of amazing that that type of a change would require environmental review. But because, all we're doing is asking to store the water for longer than we might otherwise store it. When Monterey County chose to pursue reoperations of Lake Nacimiento, they had to go through the whole process. They went through the EIR. They went through consultations with all the federal agencies, got biological opinions and everything. So
and
it's
how long did
no
that take?
Comfort, but I don't know altogether, but years.
Okay.
Tens of years. And I think they recently just got sued by maybe Steve Shemek and the Otter Project for not complying with some of the monitoring requirements. So it's a very...
So, you know, sometimes it's not comforting process. Knowing that we're in the same boat that other agencies are in, but we are. So, Jill, on the proposal from E-Corp, though, I think that would come back to this advisory committee at some point in time, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm looking. Yeah, so at this point, we're waiting for input from the TAC.
And I think you mentioned next week, and that's my understanding as well.
Yeah.
Well, keep up the good work. Keep at it.
Are there any additional questions on the Habitat Conservation Plan update?
Thank you. Thank you for the report, Jill. I think, are you going to...
Oh, yeah.
Have a, since you're the only one here, you better handle the capital projects.
Huh? Yes. Let's see. So, Turnout SCADA project... it's about 94% complete. We're just waiting at this point for PG&E to bring some power to the last location, which I believe is Oceano. So I would, at this point, we're probably, I can say with 90% confidence that we will be done by the end of August with that. They are scheduled to come out this week, but as yet, that hasn't happened. Let's see, the equipment replacement program, we have our variable frequency drives, that's the VFDs. Those are the drives that operate the membrane feed pumps, and they were budgeted for in 15-16, and they are being installed next week. So that's a good thing. We're moving forward on that. The Lopez Dam V-ditch, no new progress on that other than we are developing the scope of work for investigating it and coming up with recommendations on how to make that repair. It's something that was identified by the Division of Safety of Dams on their annual inspection. Our membrane strainer replacement project, we're actually, it says here that we're reviewing two model options, but since this was written, we actually found out that option two is not really an option, so we will be basically replacing those in kind, only using a different, instead of the cast iron ones that we have, we will be moving to stainless steel to avoid corrosion, the issues that we've had with why we had to replace them in the first right now. The coagulant feed alarm meter, that is, we're just focusing on the fastest repair for that, and it looks like that will happen probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're actually pursuing a warranty claim on that. Terminal reservoir intake repair, that was completed June 28th, and it all went really well. We had a great contractor on that. So that's completed. That was also something noted by the DSOD, so that's another thing they can check off their list. Let's see, the PLC replacement and programming, that is kind of on hold subject to the sixth rack, which we mentioned. We're not putting the sixth rack in until we figure out the membrane, until we complete the membrane strainers, the replacement of those. Everything's kind of got a domino effect here. The parking and roadway resurfacing, that's in design, and it's scheduled to take place next spring with our regular group of pavement repair projects that the county does. And then on the back page is the upcoming projects, and those are all capital improvement projects that we budgeted for this year, and so they're still on the books. We're not taking any action on them just yet. We're doing a lot right now, just trying to keep up with the things that seem to be kind of breaking down and having maintenance issues at the plant. We're actually, one of our biggest efforts right now is we're experiencing extremely hard water at the plant, which is causing a huge amount of scaling, which is pervasive throughout the plant. and it's basically calcium buildup, and it happens when your water becomes too hard. And so we are looking at what we can do to suppress the pH of the water and soften it so that we can reduce the amount of maintenance. Right now we're having to do a lot of maintenance on all the equipment constantly because it builds up so quickly, the calcium, and when the calcium builds up on like filters and pumps, pretty soon you can't push the water, you can't produce the water that you need, which is one of the reasons where the plant is only operating at 1.9 MGD as opposed to something maybe a little bit higher. So we're actually taking more state water, which is good. It's a little softer, it's easier to blend. So we're working on that. That's a big item right now. And then you can also see that on-hold projects are the power monitoring. Initially, we were having some problems with some fluctuation in the power and with a little bit of pressuring, I think, from our operators talking to PG&E, the problem has sort of gone away. So at the moment, things are working fine there. And then in addition, the sixth rack is in the same position as it was before. It's just sort of on hold. It's 80% complete. We just need to wait until the membrane strainers are replaced and we get the calcium, our hardness and the calcification scaling issue resolved, and we can move forward on that. And I think that's all I have on the capital projects. Are there any questions?
Following up on the membrane, as far as the option two being off the table, was that a cost implication or just
physically? The manufacturer, yes, the manufacturer said that their particular product would not work with our system and our layout.
Okay.
So that was something the manufacturer made the call on. So
the, I remember the discussion at the TAC meeting was we needed to get a crane in there, so county's going to buy a crane, it sounds like, no?
Well,
no,
hopefully not. Once we get the hardness of the water, it turns out that ideally we are servicing these membrane strainers like once every 6 months. So in theory, every 6 months we're getting a crane to service them. But with the scaling problem we're having, we're doing it like every 2 weeks. So right now our focus is we got to figure out the scaling issue, and then that will help the membrane strainers, and everything will hopefully start working again. About that time, it'll be drought, and we'll be at minimum pool, so we won't need the plant. No.
Jill, come on.
Optimist.
All right.
Do you think that when we get more water in the lake, is that the problem right now? The lake is so low?
That's our theory. That's our theory. We actually had the scaling problem back in 2008, and we believe it had to do with, that was shortly after the upgrade to the water treatment plant, and as the large concrete holding ponds or the DAF unit, when it started curing, it was releasing, it made the pH of the water go up, and so we experienced a whole bunch of scaling at that time, and then all of a sudden it went away. And we haven't had a problem since then. So at this point, we're not exactly sure what it is. That's our theory, is that it probably just has to do with the level, you know, what we're drawing from on the water. And we've changed the intake, and it's sort of like naturally the water at Lopez is hard. It's like an 8, and now we're like an 8.4. So even though it's just a small incremental, it's just enough to tip us the other way. So some reservoirs' waters is like around 7, 7.5, and so a little blip or a lowered water doesn't do anything. But we've always just sort of been hovering, and so we've just had a little tip the other direction. So we may be coming back to you, depending on what the solution is to the scaling, in that it's probably a fairly costly, I'm guessing, solution, in which case we may have to reprioritize our capital improvement projects. Some may get deferred, or money that was budgeted for it this year may have to be moved up into our O&M. So we'll definitely bring that back to you once we have a sense of what its impact is to the budget.
You just made me think that There's been some discussions about modifying the piping in the yard so that state water could go into the feet of the treatment plant. Mm-hmm. Because that discussion resulted from, minimum flows right now that we have to take from Lopez Lake in order to keep the plant operating. And if we feed state water into the treatment plant, then we can moderate our draws from Lopez a little bit more. And I'm curious if maybe introducing state water at the front end of the treatment plant might also help with the pH levels. You know, modifying the piping might solve two problems with one modification at the site.
Yeah, that's definitely been an option on the table. Of course, then you're retreating the water, state water, so you're kind of getting double-treated water in. You have to change the disinfection from chloraminines to free chlorine. So there's a couple issues with that, but it's definitely not it's still on the table as a possible solution.
That's great. Thank you, Jill. We don't have any action items listed for that don't require subsequent Board of Supes or action items that do require Board of Supes. No changes to that. And so future agenda items are listed there. And I don't know if we covered this last time. What do we do with those items? Are they on a list?
They've been on the list for about a year now, so it's up to the committee whether they want to keep them on the list and for future discussion or if you're ready to take them off the list.
If I might, on contract renegotiation discussions, that goes sort of hand in hand with the HCP, so I think that just stays on the list until there's some progress on that. Funding of the groundwater modeling, two-thirds of that is established, but the other third is still waiting from the Mesa. And I had a meeting with Wade Horton and Mario Iglesias with Nipomo CSD a couple weeks ago, and I thought Wade did a nice job of trying to urge Mario to get support from the other Mesa entities to be able to move forward on that. I don't see the need for water wheeling. That was one that I had brought up quite some time ago. I don't think that that's really an issue. But maybe the stormwater resource plan that Zone 3 is providing the funding match and the city of Rio Grande is the lead agency on, but it's going to benefit most all of us. But we were notified a couple weeks ago that it looks like that grant was approved.
Great.
So it would be nice to get an update on that in either September or November. Okay. That's my input.
Okay. Anybody else have items?
I just wanted to let everyone know that we did vote to put an initiative on the ballot in AG to purchase in a locally declared emergency state water. So a couple of the council members thought it was, I think most people were in favor of it, but when we initially discussed it, they thought maybe staff couldn't quite get it together for public outreach. But when we had the discussion, we just really decided the majority that we needed to get it out there, whether we had a lot of time or not, because we felt like to wait two more years would just be sort of scary. So I'm glad that that's going to at least give the voters in Arroyo Grande a chance to decide if they want to be able to purchase it. Something else that, you know, in an emergency, I think that we're going to need to look at all different options. And so that was good news, I think. And then also, I didn't know, I had talked to Jeff English about the Diablo desal and how that option sort of went away. And I was asked from members of the public why, just because Diablo is not going to be there after a while and they already have the plant, you know, why would they tear it down instead of negotiating with us to, let us use the water, buy the water, whatever. So I know that Director English said there was some discussion taking place. I don't know if it's through the TAC or what, but I know I'm getting asked about that because that was sort of on the table, and now all of a sudden it's not on the table, supposedly.
Yeah, I've been following it fairly closely. I think the immediate problem was getting the permit through the State Lands Commission. If they were going to modify the existing permit, which does not include additional water flow because of the desal, if they had to modify it, it could put it in jeopardy. So they wanted a clean, same as current. So the PG&E wanted no changes, but that could open up everything, possibly CEQA. I'm not sure what, but so their strategy was, if we're going to get it through, here's the deal. We've got to shut off desal, get it through the Lands Commission. And that was a strategy which takes desal off the table. And the other issue is once the plant cools down enough, even though you basically the problem is the discharge area, which is through the existing plant discharge. That's where they have a permit from Regional Water Quality Control Board. And that would be the way to get the discharge of the brine. At some point, that discharge is going to go away. So that's another long-term factor that they probably considered. But the immediate problem is going through the State Lands Commission.
Okay.
So that's why it's off the table. I don't see it being resurrected.
Really? Okay. Okay.
One other factor is the power cost. So with Diablo operating, we'd be able to get power to run the desal plant at a very, very low rate.
Right.
But the minute we don't have Diablo there, then we're probably going to be paying close to market rates.
Okay.
So that doesn't make it impossible. It just makes it more expensive.
Yeah. Okay. It's going to be expensive anyway, so even more expensive is probably not good. Okay. Thank you for that additional information. I appreciate it.
Any other committee member comments for the good of the group?
I have an update for you. This is regarding our Zone 3 accountant, Joanne Hilker. I don't know if you have heard, but she was recently promoted, so she will no longer be our accountant, but for the time being, until we get a replacement for her, she'll be doing Zone 3 accounting, but will no longer be at the meetings. But maybe she'll be at the next one to introduce her replacement. So she did a great job for us.
Great, thank you.
I had a question for Jill. You know, you mentioned the supplemental water, that carryover water, I think is what you're saying. So eventually, if the lake continues to drop, there will be carryover water, but there won't be carryover water. Does that make sense?
Well, I was discussing that today with Mark Hutchinson, and the way it's... He kind of used a word that was good. It'll be carryover water that's unavailable, because it would be carryover water that's below the 4,000, you know, theory in the of the minimum pool. So I think at the TAC we discussed what would happen, let's say the reservoir starts building back up. What happens to that carryover? So that unavailable carryover is some chunk of water. Who does it belong to and in what percentage? Because then as the levels come back up, you know, then that carryover is available. I mean, in theory, the LRRP we don't come out of the LRRP until we get over 20,000 acre feet. I don't know how long that will take. It sounds like based on Jim's analysis of the dryness of the soil, it could take, you know, years, even if at average rainfall. So And I did ask, I also asked Mark, I said, well, what happens when you get to 20,000 acre feet? And let's say you still got some carryover left over. You can't keep moving forward with that, because in theory, per the contracts, you wouldn't have that water. And so he said it would basically, you know, initially, it would just go away. So if we go back up to 20,000 acre feet and your agency still had 200 acre feet of carryover, it would just go away and we would go back to our old, the contracts method of calculating surplus, et cetera. Unless, of course, we initiate contract changes and we go to a storage model between now and then. You know, things might change.
Okay.
we're in flux.
Thank you. That's probably going to be need something that everybody in here is going to want to know about. It's going to have to be clear, correct? There's no confusion?
Yeah. Well, exactly, because it's likely that we will get to some point where it could be that, where there's the only thing left in the reservoir is carryover, and it's all below 4,000, so it'll just stay there until water levels come up, and at which case we'll all be in a whole nother, that will be the least, I imagine, of our worries. We will be working on all kinds of exchanges and wheeling, dealing, trying to help one another meet our needs.
Thank you.
I guess it's probably safe, everyone knows that we're in uncharted territory for Lopez Lake in terms of the operating down in these levels. So we kind of had the language of the adaptive management in the LLRP, but I don't think we anticipated being quite this adaptive or creative or needing to be. And hopefully we won't, but I think I agree, as Jim said, we're going to have to plan for that and try to stay out in front of it as best we can. So, all righty. With that, no other comments, I'll close the meeting, adjourn the meeting.
Thank you.
That's good.
That's what I do.